Welcome to the Teachers of Europe podcast, a podcast to support teachers across Europe in addressing common classroom challenges and featuring teachers that can inspire others to follow their footsteps. My name is Ruth Batista, Senior Professional Development Manager for the European School Education Platform, and I will be your host. Today's episode will explore how educators can effectively counter gender stereotypes in STEM education across all school levels. Drawing from both research insights and classroom practices in Europe, and I have with me three wonderful guests. Iro Koliaku. Dr. Iro is the head of STEM at Anatolia College in Thessaloniki, Greece, where she leads STEM initiatives and coordinates Erasmus Plus projects promoting inclusive interdisciplinary education. She's also a board member of the European STEM Educators Association, and she's a strong advocate for girls in STEM and actively promotes gender equality through international projects and networks. Welcome, Iro. Thank you for accepting the invitation to be with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Iro. And then we will have also Rafael Montero. Rafael is a high school STEM teacher at Codema School in Gijón, in Spain. And he's passionate about helping his students to develop their scientific vocations and everything e-twinning and Erasmus. Hi, Rafael. Welcome.
Hi, Rute. Thanks for having me here.
It's a pleasure. And then we'll have Mladen Slivovic. And Mladen was a physics teacher and school's career guidance team coordinator, author of board game Himbizika. And in 2018, he was elected as one of the best educators in Serbia. He is working now at the Center for the Promotion of Science in Serbia. Hi, Mladen. Welcome.
Hello, Hill. Thank you for calling me.
Thank you. So let's kick off our discussion for today. And I would like to bring up some elements to kick off our conversation. In terms of the topic that brings us together today, despite the ongoing efforts to promote equity, gender imbalances in STEM, and for the ones that don't know, STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, the gender imbalances in STEM persist across Europe. According to Eurostat 2023, only 32.8% of STEM graduates in the European Union are women, with even lower female representation in engineering, ICT, and physics-related fields. This underrepresentation is not simply a matter of individual preference. It is deeply connected to the gender stereotypes that begin influencing students as early as primary school and continue through higher education and career choices. The Nesset Analytical Report of 2024 that you will have in the resources of this podcast, the report was called Addressing the Gender Gap in STEM Education Across Education Levels, identifies that gendered perceptions of ability and belonging in STEM are shaped by a combination of social norms, curriculum content, teacher expectations, and lack of female role models. These factors result in fewer girls pursuing STEM subjects, especially during their key transitional stages like upper secondary education, where the gender gap widens considerably. Iro, let's start with you. What is your view on these factors? What are some gender stereotypes you've seen or heard in classroom when it comes to STEM subjects?
So, of course, one of the most persistent stereotypes is that boys are naturally better at math and physics, while girls are more suited for the humanities. And we often all hear comments such as math is for boys or girls aren't good in technology. So these stereotypes can discourage girls from exploring STEM fields. And in my point, they might also put pressure on boys. So in STEM competitions, I've noticed that when students are choosing their roles, girls are often steered towards or choose roles like design, marketing, communication, while boys take on the programming, the engineering, the building part of the competitions. So it's not about capability, it's about confidence and conditioning. That's why we need to be intentional as teachers as to how we assign roles and how we build this environment where students can feel equally capable and welcome in every aspect of STEM.
Actually, in the same report that I just mentioned, an ESSET report, we can see that girls often perform equally well or even better than boys in STEM subjects, but they do report lower confidence levels. And this phenomenon, known as the confident gap, can discourage them from pursuing further studies or careers in these fields. And actually, Rafaela, I have a question for you. Have you observed while you teach any differences in confidence or participation levels between boys and girls, even when their performance is actually similar?
Yes, that is something that I totally agree with what you have just said. I mean, I am going to speak in broad terms. You know that students change from one group to the other, but it's true that in my experience, I've seen some coherent differences between boys and girls. Mm-hmm. And usually girls tend to be more self-demanding, and they tend to have a more negative perception on the results. I'm talking in average. That means that something that really amazes me is that the same result can be seen as a success by boys and as a failure by girls. All in all, that means that this has a very big impact on the self-perception the girls have, or the efficacy they have in my subject, which is mathematics. Additionally, another thing that it's also very coherent year after year is that questions are usually done mostly by boys than girls.
Really?
So that is also something that for me as a teacher, it's important to, you know, create let's say an environment to try to tackle this. But those are the things that come to my mind right now.
Mm-hmm. Mladen or Ido, do you have any examples of this as well? Or
actually, my experience in the matter is different. For example, during the competitions in physics, the most awards were actually placed by the girls. I was teaching and training, and three of them are currently on PhD. Mm-hmm. In physics. So we started like years ago. The problem is that often what we called stereotype is disguised as something called common sense. For example, it's just natural to believe that girls are less prone with tools, less experience. And girls have those kind of opinion. I remember there was this girl who was so convinced that she cannot do anything with tools, like she's clumsy and all. And that actually lasted a long until there was a competition for a tournament in physics where she had to design her own experiments. And there she discovered how much she loves it, how much she's good at it. And now she's an experimental physicist. Mm-hmm. So basically, the only thing that I can say right now that is really, really bad is that gap between what girls believe they can do and what society believes they can do and what they really like to do. Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest problem I have ever seen in my career so far.
Well, I think there's a role here also for the teachers. To influence, and you have just expressed how you influence this girl, which is a very nice example. But I think sometimes it's really unconscious biases among teachers. And for instance, such as calling on boys more frequently in science discussions or encouraging boys more actively in technology. I mean, all of these elements can reinforce this stereotypical thinking and reduce the girls' participation and discourage them to participate and be interested in STEM. How early do you think these stereotypes begin to influence the students' interests? What could be some early signs that teachers should look out for?
Well, it's from the day they were born. You know, from the day they were born, they were raised by the parents. Parents often have stereotypes that are, some of them are actually so deep, they are hidden. Like, for instance, if it's a girl and she tries to grab father tools, it's like, no, 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 you're going to get hurt yourself and something like that. Basically, you're not even aware of what you are doing. However, the problem with the teachers is that they are also the part of society, and they often do not see their role, or they are unable to change their role in this matter. We noticed that in the IT department in our school, mm-hmm. that's the class for the gifted students. For years, there would be like 13, 14 boys and 2 girls. Mm-hmm. So it's just not possible that the girls who are achieving higher scores in mm-hmm. math are generally not into IT, or just decide not to enroll in this kind of course. So what I did was I actually took some of the older girls who were already there, and we organized, I let them organize workshops. Mm-hmm. I hid myself. I didn't even show up for there. Mm-hmm. So basically what we did was the peer learning, in which the girls from the IT department showed other girls from elementary school what are they doing, what they could be done, breaking the stereotypes. And that program was actually called The Girls Can Do It. Girls Can mm-hmm. Do IT. And it was actually a great success. Basically, someone is showing you that she can do whatever she likes with it. And that year, we actually had 4 girls enrolling. For a small town, I know it doesn't sound much, it's not a big population and all, but I was really proud at mm-hmm. that time. These are the things we need to work about. If we want to break some of the stereotypes, they are so deep, we need to focus on peer learning and slowly change the mindset.
Well, but it's has a heavy cultural element, I would say. Ido, what's your opinion on this?
So I totally agree. Peer learning is really important. When you have younger girls showing their passion, showing that they can do it also to younger students, to new mm-hmm. students, it's always a big success. Role models in general are really, really yeah. important. Role mm-hmm. models in the classroom, people or women that students can actually connect, that can connect to their real life. We tend to use examples of historical figures in our science courses, like we have Marie Curie or Ada Lovelace, which are wonderful mm-hmm. stories, but students nowadays cannot relate with these figures. So we real women scientists that work today in CERN, in the European Molecular mm-hmm. Lab, in ESA, these are women that students can ask questions to and they can really relate to.
But what would be the also for you early signs of these stereotypes that the teacher should be paying attention to?
I agree with what was said, like from day one. So it's really important to start from pre-kindergarten. And also mm-hmm. kindergarten teachers should be trained on mm-hmm. how to also look at this this gender gap or this confidence gap that of girls. So there is a wonderful program. It's called Puppeteering in Engineering. It's from MIT that we're using in my school. And they use puppets to introduce engineering concepts to pre-kindergarten students. General mm-hmm. neutral puppets with general neutral names, and with activities that build a community for all the students, boys and girls, to collaborate and build all the things they're doing. So it's a wonderful idea mm-hmm. for young learners.
That sounds fun, indeed. Rafael, would you like to add something on this?
Well, yes. The first thing is that I, again, from my experience, I get a lot of "I'm not good at math" from girls than mm. from boys. So that for me is a very important sign. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's not a very big number of people who say that, but it's just that it's more oftenly said by girls than from boys. So yeah. that is something that I would like to tell you. And additionally, I also believe that, as Ido and Mladen said, that there is a need for role models. Let's say role models at all levels. Mm-hmm. So we need scientists, female scientists. We need woman of young age, we need girls. One activity that I believe it's having a great impact in my school is that we are a charter school. So we have not only primary, but also secondary and high school students. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now it's the end of the year. Everybody is tired. We are looking at the summer. So we are teaching geometry, which is mathematics, and we do it in a collaborative way. The students, they have to prepare like a cardboard game, you know, something similar to Trivial or any of these kind of games we all have at home. And the questions, they have to be based on the geometry, the theory that we give in the lessons. So I ask my students to have like two sets of questions. One is for, let's say, the high school level, but the other is for the primary kids. Mm-hmm. So once they have finished the game and they have tried it, then they go to the primary and then we teach it. And the good thing is that, the young girls are seeing a high school female students, let's say, owning the mathematics, you know, because they are the ones who are giving the questions, giving the answers, helping them. I hope that is, let's say, like a little grain of salt in the to make this thing better.
No. And on that, actually, the report that we mentioned in the beginning also highlights the significant underrepresentation of women in STEM teaching materials, leadership positions, and professional guest speakers, for instance, which contributes to, I would say, also a lack of identification and aspiration among girls, like Ido was mentioning. I mean, we have the examples from the past, the models from the past, but who do we have today that can be a role model? Your example, Rafael, from what you did now with your students is a very nice one. Ido, how do you think students, especially girls, and maybe also Rafael can answer this question, how they respond when you bring in a female role model to talk openly about, let's say, inclusion in STEM?
They are usually really excited because they pose a lot of questions. So this year, each year we have a science and technology conference for students. And this year we had as a keynote speaker the head of our science center here in Thessaloniki. She did a wonderful speech and talked about her role as a scientist in our community. And after that, it was really engaging and really nice to hear so many girls picking up the microphone and posing different questions. Mm-hmm. So last year we had another speaker. We didn't have so much engagement. Now this woman maybe gave them the confidence to pick up the microphone and in front of 400 other students ask a question. So what's important here is that this keynote speaker was selected by a boy that was the head of our student conference committee. And that for me is really important because it showcases that it's also about raising a generation of boys who champion equality and recognize excellence in any form. So that's also an important point for me.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I meant to ask you as well, how do you think boys can also be part of the solution and not just observers? How can actually male students can play a role creating a more inclusive and respectful STEM classroom culture? I don't know if you want to answer that or if we can give the floor to...
I just want us to add that if boys are not part of this conversation, then we will never have a solution. So boys should be a part of this discussion. Inclusion is the word, not separating girls from boys, but making an inclusive classroom where everybody feels welcome, feels that their ideas are heard, feels the respect of what they're saying and what they're doing in the classroom. So it's also, of course, about boys.
And do you, any of you, have any examples where boys actively challenged the stereotypes and supported their peers, female peers in STEM? Do you have any example of that?
In my lessons, I really don't see any difference among the students. And when they do this kind of, let's say, group work, or I give them an assignment, I really just see that they just help each other. So it's just, let's say that is not, there is no difference on the gender. But I believe that probably part of the problem is that boys may not be aware that there is a problem. So as Hiro said, we need to have an inclusive environment and tackle this thing in an inclusive way with boys and girls. Because it's sad, but sometimes there are these very good activities, a lot of effort, lot of budget. I'm talking about administration or ministries of education activities that they want to foster STEM among the female students, but you know, they are not inclusive, and they, let's say, they miss the mark, and the girls, they get too much information, and the boys feel like they are not part of the solution. So I think that it's the real answer here is just to be more inclusive and find things that work.
Do you have any examples, Madan?
Well, to tell you the truth, it is a really, really good question, because often boys think of themselves as in position of power over the girls, and why would you release the power just easily? Bing. And the thing is that in that case, you absolutely must not separate them. You must treat them equally. You must show them that the results are in no matter related to gender, but to personality, to your personal own settings, and that kind of things. But it can quite be challenging. And if it comes too much, I really need sometimes to even talk privately with someone and try to explain the situation, or that there is no, absolutely, in school you must not have any kind of inequality adjustments, or no matter what ground you take. And it's individual and really, really, really hard.
And the teacher has a key role, I would say, in that. We already mentioned a few examples, but one of the key concerns raised by research is the widening of the gender gap during educational transitions, particularly from lower secondary to upper secondary and then higher education, where girls' dropout rates in STEM subjects increase significantly. You mentioned, Rafael, already one example, but maybe Mladen, can you refer any strategies or small changes that you have also tried in your classroom? I know you're not currently teaching, but that you may have tested in the past that challenged the gender stereotypes?
Well, to tell you the truth, in recent couple of years when we did the projects, I didn't particularly try to include more girls. I just noticed that some of them are becoming better at leaders, as leader of the team. And I quietly use that to like give them, encourage them to take on the role and go even further with it. For example, there was this team we were preparing for a competition, and national, and I noticed that there was this girl who was really putting her heart into everything. I decided that, you know, maybe you should act as a team leader, and because one of you has to be. And it's actually the best decision I ever made. It's watching the whole team from start at January to the final competition in May. And she was like a heart pumping the blood in everyone, but we were tired. Like, no, we have to get up. We have to fight for it. We need to work more and everything. And there's this scene, there's this really cute scene at the end. They're the national champions, and they're at the European champion presenting on stage and with the mics, and they're presenting their idea, their innovation, their student's company, and they finish. And the presentation went perfectly. Everything is okay. And all of a sudden, she looks at them, they need to bow to the audience. But you know how when it's stress day and you're like finished with your job, so you just drop your muscles and everything. And she's just like, get straight up. But all the boys on the team, like, oh, and they're bowing. It's that kind of thing. We need more action. We need more roles like that. We need to put them in the position to work for something, to become part of the team. They need to work. Basically, whatever you think, the only way to break stereotypes is by work, by meeting a lot of people, by showing yourself and your own values and what you contribute to the team. And what I believe that if we want to break those, the only strategy we have to use right now, well, one of the strategies at least, would be to include more teamwork, more project-like ideas, more opportunities to get out of your own comfort zone and learn more and become a better person. That means for everyone, boys and girls.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned there a few, I would say, keywords like teamwork, project work. And actually, I would like to ask also now Rafael, because of his experience also in eTwinning, the report also recommends that teachers need to be trained to reflect on their own practices and implement these inclusive pedagogical strategies. Do you think teachers are getting enough training? How would you connect also what the teachers need to what Mladen just mentioned in terms of promoting teamwork and collaboration?
Yeah, I mean, it's key that we teachers have time to reflect on the issue and also to find things that work and share good practices. I mean, we don't have to invent the wheel. We just need to be aware that there is a problem and there sure is a solution somewhere. I mean, so anything that allows teachers to get together and share their insights and, well, obviously, eTwinning is a very good place to do that. By the way, now I'm probably being a little biased, but let's say that I think to any teacher that is hearing this and he or she doesn't know what is eTwinning, I just suggest to go there. If you're interested in finding information regarding how to be more inclusive in your classroom, would like to find other teachers at European level who think that this is an important aspect of their teaching practice and you want to develop yourself professionally and try to be a better teacher, that's the place. You are not only going to be, let's say, ahead of the game with a lot of people who are going to share very good ideas, but also you are going to learn from teachers, you know, because sometimes we teachers also tend to underappreciate our ideas and our inputs. First of all, go to eTwinning, find there, you are going to find there a lot of training, and also you are going to find along the way a lot of good friends.
Thank you. Thank you, Rafael. Indeed, we already concluded that there's a huge role to be played by the teachers. But Ido, actually, do you believe that the current STEM curricula in your country in particular, and if you have, of course, any other thoughts about any other country, do you think that the STEM curricula is gender inclusive? And if not, what would be the gaps? How can actually the textbooks, the teaching materials, assessments can be improved to avoid any gender bias?
So I would say about Greece and that there is room for improvement because the language might not be consistent. Images might be showing boys doing robotics while girls helping someone or doing something not related to science. We do have references science, women in science, but they might be on like side notes and not reinforced in the classroom. So there is a lot of improvement. Also in assessment. So I always see, for example, problems in physics that only refer to boys or use boys' names. Also in that, some work needs to be done. The good thing that is that, as also Rafael said, there is a lot of movement in Europe, a lot of good things happening in e-twinning, a lot of projects, European-funded projects that help teachers have resources for their classroom, that they promote gender equality. So Blooming the Future, one program that I'm part of, is one of that. I've recently seen a Streamit project, a New Horizon project, that also has really interesting findings and resources about this. So I definitely urge all teachers to look into all the resources that are out there and use them in their classroom.
Thank you. Thank you, Ido, for your reflections. And also the research tells us that these stereotypes are reinforced by classroom interactions, as we already discussed a little bit, the textbooks, as you are rightly pointing out, media as well, and also parental expectations, which we actually didn't mention yet. Rafael or Mladen, one of you or both of you, what role do you think school leaders and also curriculum developers can play in promoting gender equality in STEM education? And maybe you can also refer to the parental expectations that we didn't comment yet. Yeah.
So let's say that I believe that the management is obviously one of the key aspects of any school. I mean, as with any kind of thing that you want to change, first of all, you need to be aware that there is something that you need to change. Get some data so you can set some specific objectives, develop a plan, and then evaluate and monitor what is being done. So I think that is something that needs to be done at the management level. Because usually teachers, we don't have time. I mean, you go into your classroom and your classroom is a box and you don't get the big picture of the school. That is what the management has to do. So it's not only, we were talking before about the twinning. To anyone who knows the amount of time that you need to invest in developing a good twinning project, if that is something that is an activity that the school wants to involve because the school believes that it's something that is going to have a very positive impact in the inclusiveness of the students, then you need to secure not only budget but also human resources, you know, time, allocate teachers' time to these kind of activities, detect activities that you would like to implement in your school, give them to teachers you know are going to believe in, are passionate about them, and they are going to implement it accordingly to your what you envision. Yeah, I think that's I mean, being a school leader is something that is a lot of work. Yeah. So that's all on my part.
Madin?
Oh, well, to tell you the truth, the curriculum developers tend to have an opinion that everything is important, and they just fill in and fill in and fill in. And there's also in Serbia, there's a lot of amount of grade you need to do, like two oral exams for every student in every term and plus some other. And that really leaves you no time for the projects, teamwork, what we discussed before. And those are important things. So if you ask me, I believe that less curriculum, more activities, more teamwork should be implemented at the state level, at national level, not just from school to school. Currently, we are in position that some teachers decided to use their time, use their energy to give more to classroom. And that's not done by all teachers. And then we have like example of 100 teachers who have a great work, great activities, great ideas. And we say, wow, that's beautiful. And we forget that there are hundreds, thousands of teachers who didn't do anything. That basically we just have like 1% of them and less. This means that those kind of teaching, the best kind of teaching, is not a rule. It's an exception. And that's the bad thing. That's the thing that we need to worry. How to make that good examples are standard, not just some coincidences. Mm-hmm. Also, when we think about the parents and their influence on career, and they have a lot of influence, they also tend to like leave some part of their own past to their children. There was this girl who was preparing to go to medical school, but her parents were absolutely against it because it's not a job for a girl to be on the call all day or something like that, waiting for a patient. And that kind of thinking is what we are up against. I'm not even sure how to begin with the solution. More parents, involving more parents in the school is can be good, can be bad. Some examples are really, really, really low. But once again, this is a question at the national level, not just at one classroom. Solution is not easy, but when was a major change ever done by making and finding an easy solution?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for a teacher who's just beginning to explore this type of questions and this type of issues, what would be one small but meaningful change that you would recommend that they could make tomorrow? I know, let's say, the more general solution might be hard to find now and maybe ambitious to look for, but maybe with small changes, we can do something. So if you had to give an advice to a teacher that is just starting, what would be the small meaningful change that they could do to improve?
Well, I would have to tell him that you don't know nothing. And you will have to learn a lot and you will make mistakes, but keep your mind open. It's not the problem if you have if you made a mistake. The problem is if you start repeating it as the rule and thinking that this is the way it has to be. Everybody has its own teaching style, its own methodology, mm-hmm. and their own liking. So it's important to find a passion and follow it. And if your students are having the passion, help them.
Rafael, you were reacting a little bit on this answer. Are you agreeing or disagreeing?
I am totally agreeing. You know, it was just this comment from Laden as to you know nothing. That's so true. You know, we begin... Well, each teacher is different, of course, as Mladen has already said. But I mean, you always begin with, you think you know what is going to happen, and then you enter in the classroom and things don't go as planned, no? So that also goes with all this talk we were delivering about, you know, curricula, which is important, but, you know, it's also very important other things, no, that they are probably more important for a teacher, you know, in the classroom. So, yes, I totally recommend just to listen to your students, be patient, of course. And then if you are going to be a future math teacher or thinking of being a math teacher, always, always tackle the I'm not good at math question with data or with what makes you think that. You know, that's, as I told you before, that's a question that I get more often said by girls than by boys. I don't know where does that come from. I really don't think are the parents, because parents want the best for their kids. We teachers also want the best for the kids. Something is something we are doing that we are not doing it correctly. We need somebody to point it, what we are doing wrong. But always tackle that question. Give some time to the student to express what he or she is feeling about. Just try to give him or her some data and make so it's clearer what is happening. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Rafael, what resources, well, communities you already mentioned, training, or training have helped you most in becoming more aware of these gender dynamics in your classroom?
Well, first of all, talking to other teachers, that's a must always. As I said, it's you enter a classroom and you are in a box and you need somebody from outside to help you see what is really happening. If you have the opportunity to have some co-training, co-teaching. I'm sorry, I don't know the word, but another teacher goes into your classroom. That mm-hmm. is something very good to have new ideas. I recently, it's not exactly answering your question, but I recently got acquainted with a woman in tech by mm-hmm. Google, and that is something that I really enjoyed. I mean, I saw this mother and 13-year-old girl talking about quantum computing, and I was just thinking, I mean, I want to bring this 13-year-old girl to my classroom and you know, just to give her my 55 minutes of mathematics. Just go on, girl, just speak about all these wonderful things, you know. So yeah, try to bring fresh air into your classroom. Yeah, that's also important.
Okay, great. Before going to the conclusion, I would like to ask if you have anything else that you would like to add in terms of our discussion, Ido, anything that you would like to add?
So the amazing comments, I totally agree with all the ones that were heard. Especially tackling the question of the thing that I'm not good in math, I'm not good in physics. It's something that we must address. If I could give an advice to a new teacher, is to be intentional so that inclusion doesn't happen by accident. So it's really important for us to reflect about our classroom, to choose our words, choose what we bring into our classroom, the real world examples. And of course, do not forget about boys in this equation. So make discussions and reflect, always reflect.
That's lovely. Thank you, Ido. Anyone else would like to add something else?
Yeah, I can just say, it's walk, so just keep walking and try to include as much as possible outside of the classroom activities for all.
Mm-hmm. Well, then in terms of conclusion, maybe to challenge you to give one last message, although Ido and Mladen already kind of gave that. But Rafael, one small change that you made that had a big impact was what?
Being aware that perceptions create reality. So if the student believes that he is bad at math, he's going to get bad results. He or she is going to get bad results. Mm-hmm. So always, always, always positive comments, positive feedback. Yeah.
That's very good. Thank you. Mladen, a moment that made you realize the importance of gender inclusion in STEM was?
When I actually quit my job at the medical school and I transferred to elementary school, there were three girls there that were like huge potential. And we were preparing for a competition and we were at the state level. Basically, it wasn't easy to get there. And all of a sudden, all the boys are pushing. And for the other, there are like 300 children, the best physicist in Serbia. And the night before, you know, we practiced everything. But the night before, they almost got to tears because what if they forget what they have learned? What if that happens tomorrow? And then I realized it's not just giving them knowledge, it's also a moral support that, you know, whatever bad thing happens, it happened, you know, we're going to get better. And that kind of thing made me realize that maybe we were like all focused too much on results instead of the growth.
That's very deep as well. Thank you. Ido, I know you already gave a lot of advice, but if you give one piece of advice to another teacher trying to create a more inclusive STEM classroom, what that advice would be?
I totally agree with Rafael with giving being positive, and being yourself a role model for the students. So I think that's really important. In the classroom, act in a way, for as you being the role model for your students. I remember what I do in my classroom that's connected with what Rafael said is that I have a story that I tell them about, a storybook that I read when I was young about a little train that went up the hill and said, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can. And that's what I want my students to have. If we think that we can do something, we can achieve it.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. It was a very interesting conversation that I actually wouldn't mind to continue. But unfortunately, we have to close our conversation. Thank you so much for accepting the invitation to be with us in this episode. This was the Teachers of Europe podcast. Please stay tuned for the next episode.